Hey guys, welcome back to the Homework Assignment Podcast. We're here yet again with Blake Clark with Limitless Realty. So thanks for joining us, Blake.
Glad Absolutely. To have you back again. Yeah, thanks for having me again.
It's been, I think, 2 or 3 months, I think, since we had you last. Maybe it was even longer, but I feel like time has just flown by since like the new year and so many things have been going on. So what's been up with you?
Same. Just selling a lot of houses.
Just hustling. How's the market right now, man?
Depends on who you ask. I mean, there's opportunity everywhere. Ironically, I mean, the market interest rates are high, inventory's piling up, but for whatever reason, we're having the absolute best year ever. I think as far as sales go,
that's solid.
We're already over 130 million in sales and we're not even halfway through the year yet. So I know for us, we're actually outpacing where we were last year and the previous year.
So what makes you think, like, how are you separating yourself from other real estate agencies?
You know, I had
especially right now.
Yeah, I just had a long conversation today at lunch with a really good friend of mine about this, and I think one of our biggest differentiators is that we focus on quality agents, and I know a lot of people will say that, but for us, we don't take just anybody in the door. To really, I think, excel in my line of business, it has to be like in the real estate space. You have to be a really good problem solver. You have to be a great marketer. You have to be extremely creative. You have to understand how money works, you know, how to move it around, creative financing, potentially leveraging, you know, owner carries, wraps, things like that. You know, financially, does it make sense to buy our rate down? That's a big one. You always hear a lot of agents out there marketing, oh, you could buy your rate down. Not understanding that if you're a business owner, you know, sometimes buying the rate down isn't always the best option. You know, if you got to put down an extra 60, 70K on some of these properties to buy the interest rate down to maybe save yourself $1,000 a month, you know, the thing to question yourself, especially with a lot of my clientele, I work with a lot of high-end business owners and entrepreneurs, is could you take that same 60 to 80K and make more than $1,000 a month, right?
Yeah.
If you're leaving, you know, 80, 90K on the table where you could be making $5,000, $6,000 a month extra by deploying that back into your business and maybe you got to pay $1,000 a month mortgage, you're still net positive 3 to 4K more.
Yep.
Most agents don't know how to break that down or they're not skilled enough to have that conversation because they don't take the time to educate themselves and learn. So for us, one of the things we really do is we try to create really good problem solvers. We run through a lot of different scenarios. Every real estate transaction can be from as simple as literally just a normal conventional closing to an owner carry to a wrap situation. So that's kind of what's been setting us apart is, you know, we find a lot of opportunity in this market, especially as overall market conditions get challenging. What levers can we pull to make it work, right? And there's a lot of different ways, a lot of different angles to look at where I feel like 70 to 80% of this industry, they all look at the, you know, the cookie cutter stuff. Oh, here's this loan. Here's the conforming loan limits for a conventional or an FHA. Well, there's actually 15 other ways you can structure a deal outside of a traditional conventional loan, which most agents don't take the time to learn.
Yeah. So obviously you've been in the real estate industry and you were a real estate agent for other companies before you guys started your own thing, right? So what is the, so obviously we have a lot of business entrepreneurs, people who are starting companies that listen to this podcast. And one of the things I'm curious about is going from, so one, the real estate industry is super competitive, obviously, right? So what was the biggest difference or I guess transition for you from going to, you know, from a real estate agent to a real estate agent that is also now running, training and building an actual business and a brand?
I think the biggest difference is I can tell you from myself and a lot of people I know that are really successful is we grew out of necessity, not because we wanted the title. I never had, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, were you going to own a real estate brokerage? The answer would have been absolutely no. If you would have asked me 10 years ago when I first got into it, are you going to have a team? The answer would have been no. If you would have asked me 10 years ago, would you even be doing active production? The answer was no. Because I got into real estate solely for investment purposes. I lost my corporate job and I didn't have a 401k anymore. And I said, well, I better start doing something for retirement. And, you know, everybody I knew that made a crap ton of money was investing and held real estate at some form or another. I didn't really even have all the answers. I just knew one way or the other I wanted to be involved in real estate. So I got my license. At the time, I was doing freelance marketing for some doctor's offices and a few other people. And then I was also running some online e-commerce stores making money. And so I said, I need a place to reinvest this capital that I'm getting. Let me get my real estate license, maybe do some flips, maybe do some rentals. Which turned into, at the time, you know, a couple of my buddies were like, hey, help me buy a house. Got the deal done, you know, got really creative with marketing. At that time, 10 years ago, nobody was really leveraging like Facebook marketing and ads at the time. But because I had a background in e-commerce, I jumped right into that. It's a little more competitive now in that space. But that's where I kind of got my teeth cut on that. And so I took off got a lot of, you know, traction pretty quickly just by taking some of the principles I learned from corporate America with marketing, consistency, e-commerce marketing. But it was never with the intention to sell. Like literally, I didn't even get my license with the intention to do sales. And here we are now, you know, I've got almost 70 people working underneath me at, you know, doing a couple hundred million dollars in sales a year.
It's crazy.
It was never part of the plan. It's just, I didn't even, to answer your question, want a team to have a team. I told my wife, I actually resisted having a team. I just got so dang busy. I had no choice but to start hiring help.
Yeah.
And so, I think the biggest misconception I see, especially with social media, is a lot of people want the title. A lot of people want the CEO label, the work for myself label.
Yeah.
All the BS. And in reality, if you look at the people that are really doing it, they're not really doing it for the title. They're doing it because they just grew to that point. They kept their head down. And, you know, same thing to answer your question. When I started the real estate brokerage, we had outgrown the previous brokerage that we were at as far as marketing, sales volume. You know, they had 300 and I think at the time they had 330 agents. I had 10, and 10 of my team was doing almost 28% of that entire company's production out of 328. And at that point I said, okay, obviously I'm not in the right environment. You know, they weren't really in alignment with, you know, training, social media marketing, brand building, collaboration, creative financing. Like our old brokerage was just very cookie cutter. Show up, do a transaction, call me if you need help with some paperwork. And I wanted to create an environment to grow. So we actually created my brokerage solely to just move my team under our own leadership without having to be with a different company, which then turned into a lot of other agents and teams wanting to come work with me.
That's phenomenal. Again,
it was never, the intent was never, hey, I'm going to start this big company producing multi-millions in sales. It just happened out of necessity as time went on.
Yeah. No, and I want to dig into this a little bit more. This is awesome content. Like a lot of people, I feel they're like, I'm like, you find someone, they're like, hey, yeah, I want to be a business owner. It's like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Well, you know, I don't know what my passion is.
Right.
And from what I'm getting from what you're saying is like, hey, the real estate part, obviously it just happened. It wasn't the passion part, right?
Right.
The passion, basically it was a stepping stone for you. Mm-hmm. So I guess that brings me to a question is like, if the real estate, maybe it's a passion now, maybe it's not, but what is the actual passion in behind what you do on a day-to-day basis currently?
The passion is sales. The thing is you can plug me into any business. It doesn't matter if I was selling cars, if I was selling clothing, like selling online. Like I like the sales process. I like the psychology of sales. I like helping people. I like problem solving. Real estate just happened to solve bigger problems for people, like AKA putting roofs over their head, deploying capital to purchase investment properties and help people, you know, maintain wealth. Like I've got a handful of clients who I've made well over a couple million dollars so far in the last 4 or 5 years that I single-handedly would find a transaction, buy the deal, structure it, run a performa sheet on, hey, if you do this kind of work on it, sit on it for a year or two, your estimated outcome would be this. And so for me, that's a lot of fun. I was just talking today, we had a training with my team and, you know, I don't focus. A lot of people ask me, you know, I do a lot of high volume. I think this month alone, I'm almost a little over 13 million in transactions on my own, not including my companies.
Yeah.
I pay zero attention to the output. I pay all the attention to the input. How many conversations do I have with people? I never track what I have in escrow at the moment other than just making sure the transaction's being serviced. I don't count transactions for the month. I pay attention to none of that because if you pay attention to the top end of your funnel, which is acquiring customers, making sure you're doing a good job following through on your commitments, the more you do that on the top end, by default, the bottom is going to spit out a result for you, AKA transactions. But so many people look at the other side of it. They pay attention to every month, I got to make this sell, make this sell, make sale. Well, what activities, if you shifted your focus from making the sale to shifted your focus to just doing the activities to acquire a customer at a high level, you're going to have more activities, right? Making the calls, building the connections, having the conversations, doing the marketing. If you put a high emphasis and focus on that, by default, you're going to have a really big pipeline on the bottom. But so many people look at their sales funnel as a straw. What goes in the top, they want to come out the bottom. No, just focus as much as you can, stuff it in the top. And then this is a fine balance too, because one of the lessons I learned is you can grow too fast and then your quality really starts to suck, right? If you don't put the systems and processes in place, I've had this happen where I had so many transactions going that I couldn't keep up with the paperwork. I couldn't keep up with the follow-up calls. I was having to miss appointments because I was over here. And you know, there's a point where it's a fine dance, right? You don't want to perfect the process so much that you're second guessing everything and you're not continuing to grow and, you know, not taking on more at a responsible rate. But then the other half of that is you're growing so fast, the quality starts to suffer. You pay less attention to the systems and the processes, and then you start pissing off all your customers and get a bad reputation. So it's a fine dance along the way. If you do it right way though, it'll work.
Guys, let me just stop for a second. This is a second time that we've had him, and every time, so first of all, every time you open your mouth, there's gold that comes out, like literally money. Those are gold nuggets, guys. Okay. Like, pay attention to it. It is key 100%. The other part of this is, you know, when you are actually building your company and you're going through those moments like, hey, you grew too fast, right? So like, let's focus on that for a second. I want to tackle that. The mistakes of, hey, you took on too much and now your quality is slipping, right? Yep. And you're letting down clients, you're possibly ruining potential relationships that are going to bring you more value and more money into your company. How do you handle that if you're in that position, or how did you handle that as you actually started to go through and realize you're having that issue?
I think you have to just be aware is number one. Like, you, a lot of people try to not be aware until they're forced to be aware, right? You always ask people like, oh, my health, I ended up in the hospital with a heart attack. And if they would have paid attention all along, you probably would have saw it. If you were paying attention to your health and doing your blood work, you wouldn't be caught off guard that you had a heart attack 2 years later, right? If you're all of a sudden go bankrupt and you're like, well, if I was doing a little bit of self-auditing and paying attention to my finances and making sure I had some cushion, if you're doing these healthy checkups along the way in any area of life, sometimes you can prevent these things from happening, right? But us as business owners, what happened? We're so focused on growing and growing and growing, and you finally get a little wind in your sails, and you know, we have a hard time saying no. That's the problem. As an entrepreneur, you start to say, you should say no to some things. You know, there's some clients, some projects that just do not make sense for what my business is. And sometimes we make the mistake of trying to fit everything into our business, where some clientele, some projects just don't make sense, right? So for example, what that looks like with me is I started working with a lot of really high-end luxury clients. Those are just deals that I personally can't just hand off with, right? That relationship is very near and dear to me. And usually, and a lot of those relationships come from very close friendships. And there was other transactions where I would get a random 40K piece of land out in Eloy, Arizona, right? And if you don't treat those a little bit differently, or you don't deploy leverage to help out with that, and you're like, okay, I'll personally drive out to this 40K piece of land to take care of this thing that's not really that important. Even to that seller, it's not that important. They're just sitting on it, but you're treating it the same as a $4 million piece of property, you know, because you're just taking everything without delegating. Eventually, yeah, you're going to have freaking problems. You know what I mean? And so for me, I've had to really sit down and say, okay, the game that I'm trying to play is how much money do I make per hour right now? And this will be a good algorithm for you to, or a, you know, formula, I should say, for you to put into. But one of the things that one of my business coaches taught me a long time ago was, you know, how much money do you make this year? And we'll do. And he's like, how many hours a week do you work? As entrepreneurs, we very well lose sight of how much we make per hour.
We lose
that hourly job and we get paid by the job, right? Yep. Great. I made 20 grand this job. Did you really make 20? How many hours did it take you? Did it take you 4 months divided? You know, you get my point. So one thing I had to really start being aware of was, as I continued to grow, I had to really pay attention to where my focus goes. And then it's like, okay, how do I decide where my focus goes? And a good formula for me was, you know, you make this much per hour. Okay, now moving forward, you really don't do anything that you can pay somebody to do at a very high and competent level below that hour, right? So for example, this is a $10 an hour task and you're a $500 an hour employee, stop doing your $10 an hour task. Yep. Don't touch anything that's under $400 an hour that you can deploy, because the other part of this is there's people that are out there that are way better at things than you are. You know, for example, I hate doing paperwork. I hate doing organization. I'm great at the sales. I'm great at the marketing. I'm great at the creative structuring of deals. But my transaction coordinator and assistant is 10 times better at organization. She's way faster at paperwork, getting it done. So by me deploying her working with me now, she just took off close to 30 something hours a week off my plate, doing something that I absolutely hate doing. And now I can redeploy those 30 hours into keeping my relationships going, quality going, making sure my work's going good. And then now what I would have done subpar anyways, because I'm not that good at it, she's doing it at a high level and I'm doing what I'm doing at a high level, and the business continues to grow now.
Delegation at its finest, 100%. Yep. So let me ask you, as you start hiring these people, right? So you start bringing in these people, you start delegating, you get rid of those $10 an hour tasks, which is key. We actually just started doing that, I think back in January, we actually started really separating that. And same thing, a lot of time off my plate, all that fun stuff. But I think one of the questions that I'm speaking for so many people is, when you start bringing these people on, the trust factor, letting go of that rod, being able to trust that this person can handle this the same way that you're going to. People can't do that, and that holds back. So a lot of businesses, from what I see, they start hiring these people, but then they don't give that full trust. They don't pass the baton, and then they end up hurting themselves even more because now they have all this revenue or this overhead they're paying for, and they're not even getting the full, you know, the full bang for their buck. What advice do you have for that?
Yeah, so training is obviously super important on that. One of the things that we started doing was building out, we have an entire checklist for an agent now. So we sat down and we said, what is every single aspect of this job that somebody needs to know? What's every aspect, top to bottom, literally from opening the friggin' door to, you know, full on, you know, 5-star closing package, whatever that may be. What do they need to be trained on? And then one by one, we go through and make sure they're competently trained on that. Mm-hmm. We start at the bottom and just work our way up, whether I'm training them on certain things or my office manager's training on them. We have to individually sign off and make sure they're competently trained on that. Number two, one thing you got to understand as a business owner is that nobody's going to do things 100% the same exact way you do. You better understand that you're going to have things operating at about 80%. You're just going to lose some efficiency. You're going to lose a little bit of quality in the first when somebody comes on because nobody's going to do it like you, right? That'd be the expectation of me sending somebody, hey, I'm going to hire you brand new. I expect you to go out and do this exactly the way that I do. Some things, what you can do is hire somebody that's a master in certain areas, right? There's going to be people that are, for example, a better graphic designer than I am. By default, I would hope that that position comes in and does better than I do at graphic design because I suck. But in some ways, if you're trying to replicate yourself, you're like, hey, this is the way I would want this job done. This is the decision that I make. Understand that that's probably only going to be done at an 80% competency, and they're going to have to shadow you and work with you and really pick up on a lot of the ways that you do things, and you're going to have to kind of critique that. That's going to be about a 6-month window to get them up to speed, right? And then it's just constant feedback. And then the other part of it is the traditional, you know, hire slow, fire fast. We've had to learn that the hard way, where, you know, I bring people in for the sake of bringing them in, or the first person that seems eager, right? But now as time goes on, that person ends up costing me way more money. By the time I keep you around, I pay you a paycheck for 3 months, you do a job, you know, you fuck up, you piss this person off, and that cost me another 10 grand. You're actually putting me in the negative. So us, again, as entrepreneurs, don't always pay attention to that. Sometimes that's a lesson you got to learn, but that happens enough and you realize it's better just to take your time, interview multiple people, you know, really hire slow. That's what it is. And then, you know, give them the opportunity. If they're slipping up, give them the opportunity, you know, hey, where did you mess up? See if they could even identify. I'm a huge fan of letting people problem solve themselves with a little bit of feedback from me. Where'd you mess up? What could you have done better?
That's how they learn.
How would you handle this better? Right. And that's okay. They're going to make mistakes. People screw up all the time and they come to me and they say, hey, I made a mistake, and they own it and it gets better. I'm good with that. You know, I make where they continue to make mistakes and don't own it and continue and continue. Okay. This probably isn't the place for you. There's a door, because you're obviously just not going to learn that lesson, you know?
When do you, or how do you come to the conclusion that, like, okay, say this person is messing up time and time again, say they've screwed up the same thing three times over.
Yep.
How do you come to the conclusion that it's the actual person that is the problem, or maybe it's a leadership issue, like not proper training, or, you know,
Well, I think it comes down to, like, asking yourself that question, like, were they properly trained, right? Like, you have to look at, I tend to look at problems these days, and if you kind of imagine, and this is something that this can work really in any business, but if you kind of imagine this problem and you just put it in your hand, and one of the things that helped me from leadership is I always ask myself, like, what the fuck are they thinking? Are they an idiot? Right? Like, because you try to see things, you think that everybody should see things your way.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is it doesn't mean that they're bad. They just see things a different way, right? We're all human. We all see things different way. Our perceptions are different. The way we were raised was different. Our exposure to stress is different. Some people have can react a certain way and some can't, you know? So oftentimes from a leadership perspective, if you assume that people should act a certain way and they don't, you're kind of at fault too, right?
Yeah.
Really, one of my favorite things to do is just kind of ask them questions. So why did you make that decision? What did you think the outcomes were going to be? And then ultimately, I'll take that problem, whether it's the person or the problem they're trying to solve. And I always tend to, if I have something on my mind, look at it in my hand and imagine I'm just turning it around and looking at it from like 5 or 6 different angles and trying to come up with 5 or 6 different solutions. So really what I try to do now with coaching and training, and this is the hard part, because this is the part, like you're saying, when do you make the decision to let them go? You have to have that honest conversation with yourself of, did I train them to be an effective problem solver? Mm-hmm. And did I take the accountability to make sure that they were properly trained, right? Because if they made a mistake, for example, in my line of business, they made a mistake on paperwork. Maybe they forgot to, when they wrote an offer on a property, the buyer was like, I want all the appliances included in this, which is not a default thing in the purchase agreement. So they should have went in. We want this appliance. Da, 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 da. We want them to leave the playground in the backyard. My agent didn't do that. Comes time to close, and the buyers were like, oh, we wanted all these things. And the agent's like, oh, I forgot to do that. Now, I can be really pissed off about that, or I can say, well, did I train them? Did I effectively train them on having maybe a checklist on should we ask for this? Should we ask for this? If the answer is yes, and I trained them and they've made multiple mistakes on that, they're probably just not going to learn, right?
Right.
But I always try to work myself down where if somebody's made a mistake in my company, in my business, I always try to take accountability from me first. It always falls on me. Did I train them? Can I competently say I went over this with them, or somebody in my office has gone over this with them? Was the answers available to them? Because of course we can't train them on everything in every scenario, but have we created an environment where the answers are there? So, you know, one of the things we do with our company is everybody in my company is on a group chat. Everybody. So I tell them, hey, if I'm not available and you have a question, put it in there, because you're going to get three other brokers that are in there and you're going to get 60 other agents that are more experienced than you. Put that question in there if you're even slightly bit of unsure. So that way they can lean on a few other people, you know, before they make a decision, even if I'm not available. So I look at it as, did I give them all the resources? Do they have access to the answers before they made this mistake and all of that? If the answer is yes, I did. Yes, I gave them the resources. Yes, I trained them. Yes, I coached them. Yes, I've been a little lenient with them and they're still making the same mistakes. At that point, It's probably time to go. So
let me ask you. So in my this is more of a question for me. So in my line of work, I have a lot of different companies that we work with, right? Because we're a contractor. So there's a lot of sub companies, and that relationship is kind of similar to an employee in a way, because the goal is to build a relationship with these companies and to have them be that person for X amount of jobs for forever, right? Sure. We want that relationship. So what would be, so like if I have a subcontractor who, you know, messes up, and I, or their people mess up, right? And it doesn't so much say anything about them, they fix it, but it happens again and I can't control that leadership.
Yep.
What would be the best way to go about keeping that relationship, but trying to help them grow without overstepping, you know, maybe like the business owner, for example, like his toes and how he runs his business? Because I actually run into that quite often.
Well, unfortunately, it does come down to that business owner. You know what I mean? Because they work for that business owner. Right. So, you know, obviously you don't want to go over him and go directly to his people unless he's given you option to do that. Maybe that's a conversation you have. Hey, on this project, do you mind if I do communicate with your trades on some of this stuff? Do you guys have questions? You know, but maybe, you know, same conversation with that business owner, you know, bring it awareness. Hey, you guys slipped up here. This is twice now. You know, I just want to make sure that, you know, we're on the same page with this stuff. And again, what I have found with a lot of people is just lack of communication, right? A $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 problem could have solved it. It's sad, but could have been solved with a text message or a phone call sometimes. You know what I mean?
It's so and true. So true.
We oftentimes get really, it goes right back to, you know, we oftentimes get fed up with other people without taking personal accountability on ourselves. You know what I mean? So a lot of what it's just called like extreme ownership, right? I used to get pissed off, especially in my line of work, is things are going to happen all the time. Things are going to go wrong. And I'm like, idiot. Yeah. I'm surrounded by idiots. Instead, it's, why don't I talk about what could I be doing a little bit better? You know what I mean? And so I always make sure that they know that they should come to me if they got questions. If you have a question, if you're even slightly unsure, just ask. Let's do whatever we can to prevent this situation, you know? And if you make a mistake, just friggin' own it, make it right. You know what I mean? And let's do it again. And again, you know, you'll start to see patterns, I think, if people are making the mistakes and over, you're doing everything you can to create that open channel of communication, probably just not a good partnership. Some people just don't get it. I'll tell you, there's been tons, I can name on, you know, multiple people that I've seen so much potential in, and I'm like, you just don't get it.
Yeah. Like, that's so
you
tough,
just don't
man.
Care to get better, you know, and I can't help you if you don't care to get better either.
Exactly. So a quick question, something that popped into my mind a few minutes ago, 72 Sold, I think, is a real estate company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I see companies like that are like, hey, sell your home in 72 hours, whatever the case is. And then there's companies that don't use that marketing tactic. And I don't know if that's a real thing, like they actually sell your home in 72 hours, but what should a business owner take more, like what should be more important, the quality or the efficiency and time?
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I think that they're like, here's the thing. Every marketplace has a need for everything. There's a Walmart, there's a Kmart, there's a Target.
Yeah.
You know, they all sell the same shit. Kmart's out of business. Walmart's still here, but they're the cheaper, right? I think when you go to Walmart and you go to buy something, you're not really expecting to pay for high quality.
Yeah. I don't buy fruit from Walmart.
Right. You see what I'm saying? But and does that mean that Walmart's wrong? No, it's just they're shopping. There's a certain consumer that is very price conscious, right? That's mm-hmm. that's what they care about. I'm very price conscious. And then you have other products that they're very much a quality focus, right? I'll pay a little bit more if the quality is good. I expect a higher quality or expect a higher service. It's the same difference between, there's a reason that McDonald's exists. They're on every friggin' corner. You're not going to go to McDonald's and take a date there and expect a 5-star dining experience. You know what I mean? You're going for the cheapest burger through a friggin' drive-thru. But if you say, hey, I want a really high quality, you're going to go pay more to go to a steakhouse. So businesses have to get in the mindset of understanding it's okay, right? So to answer your question, the 72 sold, it's a volume-based business. Personally, it's more of a bait and switch, which I don't necessarily agree with. The way that that originated was back in 2020 when the market was super hot, interest rates were low, and houses were just flying off the market.
Yeah.
Everybody was a 72 sold. Shit, I was a 24 sold. My shit was selling 24 hours, gone. You know what I mean? Yeah. So unfortunately, that's what that means, 72 hours sold. We will have your house sold in 3 days. Well, everybody's was selling in 3 days. They would purposefully, in most cases, price a home in coming soon very low, but like I'm talking $100,000 under market value to look an absolute steal. Get a bunch of frenzy and interest on it, and then right before they list it on the market, put it back to market value. But now you've got so many people emotionally connected to it; they've already made it in their mind. They want it. It's $100,000 less, and they're like, "Oh, that was
just $100,000.
$100,000 still a good deal. That's actually I want this house, right?" So, that's kind of the marketing ploy, and you're always going to see that. And I've been in this business. There's been OfferPad, right? OfferPad, same thing. 2017 OfferPad came out, and I remember everybody was freaking out. They're like, "We're going to lose our friggin' ass. This company's paying cash for houses." And OfferPad makes it seem that way. Oh, we'll give you fair market. But if you look at the old bait and switch behind an OfferPad offer, if you really, for those of you guys that have ever got an offer from OfferPad, let's just take our common sense hat and let's put it on. They're a business. How would they make money if they're paying you full retail value cash for a house and then have to put it back on the property and sell it? They're not a charity. They don't do those things for free.
Right.
What they do is they tell you, here's the price. Oh, by the way, we have a 20% convenience fee that we have. Oh, by the way, we also have an 11% built in for the repairs that we, oh, by the way, we also have a 3% built in for your agent fee. Oh, and also, by the way, we also have a 1.5% built in title fee. So yes, we're giving you market value.
Car salesman.
And then you subtract the 30% in fees that they don't, because they don't say, hey, we're going to give you a full cash value plus 30% fees. They just, it's the bait and switch, right? And so with that being said, there's still room for that from a consumer. There is that person that's like, I don't want to deal with this. I only paid $150,000 for my house. It's worth $400,000, but man, I'll even take $300,000 right now and not have to deal with that. That's still $150,000 profit for me. Sure, does that work for the consumer? So what I did, I used to, you know, I remember in 2017 when these guys came out, everybody's freaking out, all these agents, we're going to lose money. These guys are paying cash. I said, okay, let me look at their business model. I do that for every company. Let me look at their business. Every business has its pros and its cons.
Right.
So,
All
right, well, how do I compete with these guys? Where a lot of agents used to get frustrated. I just went and found some cash investors and I said, hey, in my listing appointments, clearly there's people out there that want a cash offer. They're willing to sell it under market value. So if I can bring you a deal that's like 80% of market, would you buy it? And the investor's like, hell yeah, I'll buy something at a 20% discount. Cool. Sounds good. So I go into my listing appointments.
Easy.
Now I can offer a menu. Hey, here's your full market value price. This is what you would be looking like if we sold it as a cash offer, but on market MLS just as is. And by the way, if you want a cash offer now, it is 20% under market value, but that's it. No fees or anything. I would just build my fee in with my cash buyer. I'd say, hey, just give me a finder's fee or I'll tack it in at the closing table. And I can get you a cash offer now too. Boom, problem solved that fast. Where so many agents freaked out, thought they were going out of business.
Smart.
I just did the same thing that they did. You know, hey, if the consumer wants it, I'll get it. I'll offer it for you. So I think the problem is just, yeah, like the 72 sold and there's other companies out there. There's always going to be the bait and switch. Those are the people that, in my opinion, they don't see value in what they do. If your value is I'm the cheapest, you don't ever hear the people say I'm the highest quality, but I'm also the cheapest. It's just those two things don't typically go together. Is there people that care about paying the cheapest? Sure, absolutely. Don't expect quality and they're okay with that. That's what they signed up for.
Yeah.
But also, you know, if you're going for somebody who cares about quality, like I'm a quality guy, right? When I go buy a new car, I'm not going up and picking myself up a Prius. I'll pay way more. I want a nice car because I'm a car guy. You know what I mean?
What's your most recent purchase?
Just bought a, well, I bought a couple, but I just got a 70 Chevelle SS
LS6. Guys, if you could see this, you know what, Kyle, we might need to make this the actual cover photo. Is that that car for this, man? It's, it is amazing, an amazing car. And we can talk about cars for 3 hours here.
Yeah. So, yeah, just bought that. Was looking for it for a couple years. I've already got a 71 Chevelle I'm building. But I kind of just wanted that iconic, like, American muscle, like how it rolled off the showroom floor. So it's been fully restored. It's basically a blast from the past. You just sit in the driver's seat and you feel like you're sitting in 1970. So I love about it. Smells like 1970, smells like raw gas, sounds like 1970. Windows don't seal up like a new car.
That's the best.
Some of the best things to drive, in my opinion, because it just takes you back in time when things were simpler, you know?
That's so amazing. Well, let me ask you this, because now we're talking about cars and we're kind of getting into, hey, like a personal passion, right? It's a hobby, and it's an expensive hobby. Let's be realistic here.
It's better than being on drugs, but
So let me ask you, there's a, one of the lessons I've learned and something I've been asked recently is like, hey man, like I feel like my business is doing great. And I'm like, okay, fantastic. Let's see the numbers. Oh dude, yeah, it's growing. It's doing great. How are you financially in your personal life? Oh, I don't keep track of anything. I've ran into a lot of that, and I used to do that too. How important is it for you? Like, you need to know your numbers, you need to know your goals in business, which obviously you do.
Yeah.
How important is it to be financially conscious personally, even if you have a successful business?
I think this varies from person to person. I'll tell you, like, I'm not one of those people that's just going to tell you to be frugal, because I believe you kind of have to touch the things in life that you want. Like, yeah. You know, for me personally, like, cars have always been that thing. I grew up with like nothing, like super poor, didn't have any money. We were, you know, homeless for a very small amount of time when I was a kid, and grew up in a trailer. And my first truck that I ever bought myself, I think I paid $500 for it. It was an 86 Toyota, no air conditioning, no nothing in it, you know, and just primered up. POS, and I love that thing, you know. And so I'm very goal driven, and again, this is all personal preference. I know people that give two flying craps about cars, you know, and I know people that they're obsessed with them, right? And so for me, cars is just my thing. That's what I'm into. I don't really vacation. I don't love, my wife loves more of that, but I don't. But for me, it's the things that push me. It's a tangible goal, right? So for example, I remember the very first I didn't buy my first truck, so I was making pretty good money. I was making probably $200,000 to $300,000 a year, and I still didn't buy my very first truck till I was 29 years old, like brand new. Like, I'm talking 0 miles, went to the dealership, got a new pickup truck till I was 29 years old. And I could have afforded that, obviously, by the time I was like 25, but I did delay gratification because I put a lot of money back into my business. And I like to take older cars and make them nice anyway, so even if I've driven older cars, I've always made them cool in some way. But I just was adverse. And part of that was my growing up too, right? It's the things that keep you friggin' poor. You grow up poor and you grow up with a poor mindset.
The broke mentality.
Yeah, broke mentality. Yeah. Like, my parents were, you know, very poor all the time and always in debt. And they always talked about don't leverage and pay cash for your house and stuff. And then you look at the wealthy people and they're like, no, you leverage everything. You know what I mean? And I'm like, what do you mean by that? And they're like, well, like, think about it. You pay cash for a house for, let's just call it 500 grand. Your mortgage payment on 500 grand would be, I don't know, $3,000 a month ish, depending on interest rates roughly. Or, and so some people are like, I'm going to save up 500 grand and pay cash for a house. Let's just assume for sake to save myself $2,800 a month. Well, the wealthy will tell you, but if you take that same 500 grand, you could put that in a high investment savings account and get almost that back in interest per month.
Yeah.
You know, you can leverage it
for itself.
Yeah. You know, or you can take that, go start a business, go start a company. You know, take that same amount, go buy two properties and flip them and make a couple hundred grand in a year or two, you know? So like, it's how do you use your money to make more money, you know? So for me, I've never, especially now, and I'm not saying go out and buy something, but I'm a huge fan of like rewarding yourself, because why else do you freaking work so hard? Like, I never understood these people that work 40 years and have nothing to show for it. And their humble brag is, oh, I've got money sitting in the bank. So what? You do nothing with it.
Yeah.
Same thing with people like, oh, my house is paid off. Great. You got a house that's worth 500K and you save $2,000 a month. And like, it's doing nothing for you. You're not leveraging it. You're not getting to experience life at the fullest. You don't get to take vacations. You're not, like, for me, I want to drive around a nice car, work my ass off all day. I want to drive a nice vehicle. Like, I don't want to punish myself.
Yeah. No.
You know, and again, if you're one of those people that don't care about that, or you don't care about having a nice house, don't do it. But I think it's okay to lean into your passions and just own it, right? Hey, I love to travel. I want flexibility. Create a life and build a life that lets you financially afford how to travel and have the systems in place. Mm-hmm. If you say, hey, I want to have really nice cars, that's okay. Go buy yourself a nice friggin' car. Work hard, right? Because I can tell you, like, I'm inspired by driving nice cars. I get to drive it. It's a great reward. Okay, I work hard. Now I get to go hang out and drive cool cars or have a cool collection of them and stuff like that. It's an extreme balance for me.
Yeah.
It makes me happy. So.
Well, it's kind of like on the last podcast we did together, we kind of talked about like the outside world and the judgments that people get. Like yep. when people are actually starting to make money, like some people, it's hard. Like, oh, I don't want to go buy a Lamborghini because, you know, people, like, everybody's gonna be like, whoa, like, look at this douchebag. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. Yep. And you gotta turn that off, because at the end of the day, that's going to keep you from enjoying the fruits of your labor. You know what I mean?
You'll and it's never okay be in the 1% if you care what 99% think.
Exactly. Exactly. Have you always been like that? Were you always able to not care what people thought?
Yeah, I don't give a fuck. I just don't like, I, you know, it's funny because growing up, we are taught, when I say we, like society as a whole, but I know especially me, it was like wealthy people are bad. They're assholes. They step on people. They take from people.
Yeah.
Some of the best people I know are the wealthy people these days. They are the people that help the most. They're the people that if somebody was literally their house burned down, they'd stroke a check for the family and say, don't even worry about paying me back. It's just, and then it starts to click. You're like, okay, wait a minute. And they're not the ones that are sitting around talking crap about people. They just don't care, you know?
Yeah.
And as time has gone on and I hung around these people, I just started really to connect the dots and stuff like that. And then one of the biggest, like the litmus test for life right now, right, is if you get offended by somebody. So, for example, you're like, oh, I'll go out and buy myself a nice Lamborghini. You post a picture of it online and somebody's like, oh, you arrogant asshole. And then you go click on their Facebook profile and they're like driving a shit bucket around, living in a house. And then you just ask yourself the question, would I trade places with this person? Right. No. Why do I care what they think? Like, I'll only take opinions from people that I actually respect, or like maybe they're living a life that I personally would want to live. You know what I mean? And that's in different areas too, though. Like, I know people that financially I would 100% take advice from. So if I make a mistake financially, I would listen to them, but it doesn't mean I would listen to them in maybe relationship advice, or I would listen to them in fashion, whatever, you know? So what I have found for me that works really well is number one, just understand not everybody's going to be on the same path, right? As much as people love to say it's bad to want to make money, and listen, I'll tell you, if I came into your house right now with a suitcase, $1 million, set it on your desk, you're going to tell me you're going to hand it back to me and say, no, if I said it's yours free and clear. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with money too, what I can tell you is it creates opportunity. This is the thing that people don't understand, is that it takes pressure off of, it shouldn't be everything. I can tell you, as somebody who's had a lot of stuff, I've almost burned my world down a few times by being so focused on it. Right. And as time comes on and maturity comes, you're like, wait a minute. Okay, it's not really the money thing. It's the opportunity thing, right? It gets me into rooms to hang out with people that I just genuinely want to be around that are going to make me a better person. It gets me driving my kids to school in a really cool car just because it feels good, instead of driving them in an old beat up Chevy with no windows in it, you know, just because I'm choosing not to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's been the thing for me, is just, the world is like super judgmental. It's crazy. You just post on the internet,
especially on social media.
Well, it's just a lot of people. I think a lot of people convince themselves that being mediocre and average is like some noble thing, and it's not, you know. And it's because it's a self-projection thing, because they haven't done the work to just say I could be better. The time it takes you to sit down and get out your keyboard and talk shit on somebody for doing something nice, you can get that same keyboard out, go to Google and say, how can I self-improve in this area? What kind of book can I go read that's going to elevate my mindset? The same keyboard you got out to blast this person for going on a vacation with their family that you think was stupid to waive money on, you could have shot a text message to somebody that's financially doing well and said, hey, anyway, I could just come by and be around you and learn something from you today and improve your life, you know? And so you just have to understand, like, you can't carry the weight of the world on your shoulders with that, you know? And I would just say, you know, focus on taking opinions from people you highly respect at a certain area of life. And also understand it may not align on the same things. Listen, I know people that are absolutely amazing from like friendship and relationship wise. I would go to them for advice on friendship and money. Not so much. I'm like, you're not driving the cars I want, stuff. So financially, I probably wouldn't take that advice. But then you look at it as you have counsel now. And so I call, like I always say, I have a counsel. I've got a couple guys I go to for financial advice. I got a couple guys I go to when I need to get my mind right. And I'm like, and just, you know, struggling mentally. I've got two guys I can call for that. And I've got a couple guys I can call when it comes to, you know, like relationship advice, like honest opinions and stuff. And now you have this whole council behind you.
Yeah.
To take leadership from. That's amazing in these certain areas of life. And then you shut everybody else out and you'll find
that you'll fast track that way. That's actually a smart way to think about it, to kind of build that counsel.
Yep.
Well, and we live in such, especially in entrepreneurship, it's such a high pressure environment. Yep. You have to have those ways of being able to get advice. Cause a lot of times too, it's like, if you're a business owner and you need help with something, you can't go to your employees. No. Like, they're looking at you as a leader. Like, you can't be this guy that's having problems. So it's like, well, then who do you go to? No, you have your marriage. Yes. But then I don't know, for me, like, there's certain things like, okay, I need to go.
Relatable.
It's just, you can't relate to it. So what, obviously, so we're talking about the council. Is there, what do you do personally on, like, in when you're under a lot of pressure and it's just one of those days, like, how do you relieve that pressure?
Shut the world out. Just ignore everybody.
Turn just my go phone home, off close and, the door.
Yeah. Like, I'm definitely an introvert, which a lot of people find interesting. Cause I like I'm an extra, I'm great with people and stuff like that, but I definitely love being alone. I like it all the time. I like going home and just being by myself. I could literally be out on my boat and not talk to anybody for like 3 days and I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because in my line of work, I'm out talking to people all the time. I'm always doing stuff. I'm like social media, getting just a lot of questions and comments and DMs and clients to follow up with. And then 70 people, you know, you got to help solve their problems of the world. So for me, like when I find I'm super stressed out, I just go to myself, you know, and usually I find that just doing something I enjoy, whether that be out driving my cars or, you know, just even doing yard work and stuff like that, but shutting off the phone for a friggin' day and detaching from it. Or again, if it's something that I'm struggling with personally, it could be, you know, work related, I'll go to one of those people that I seek and just have a conversation. Sometimes do just having a conversation about it. Like, hey, I don't really need anything. I just need to vent.
Yeah, just need to vent.
Like, can I bounce some ideas off you? And just having that 20 or 30 minute conversation with somebody that I respect just reframes the whole thing. And then I bounce back pretty fast, you know, try not to carry that weight as long as I don't have to. So.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's not out of time.
You're good, brother.
How'd you do that?
Okay.
Yeah, we used to have to stop at 30 minutes. This is the first one. I'm like, I just thought about it. I'm like, oh crap, did we just lose a ton of content because you forgot to hit record again? No, that's good. Okay, cool. Well, no, I mean, at the end of the day, this is all so essential. I mean, for me, you know, there's been some times, I mean, talking about like just talking to people, there's been some times I text you, man, like, hey, how do you deal with this? And I think that's really important to also know, like, hey, it's okay to need to get help. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be vulnerable in certain aspects so that you can grow, you can learn. And I think the biggest point you made was that you're not going to people who are down here to get these advices in these areas, right? A lot of people that I've listened to, a lot of coaches, obviously including you, it's like, hey, you need to be, if you're trying to learn how to run a $10 million business, you need to be talking to people who have a $10 million business. Yes. But once you get there, and you're trying to get to 20, you're no longer needing to talk to these people. You then need to go talk to those people. So as, I mean, obviously they talk, I know Andy Frisella, we're drinking first for, but like he's talked about like the no man's land, you know, it's like you go through so many different people as you grow and grow and grow because of that whole point. And it doesn't mean you have to like separate yourself from them, but at the end of the day, you got to keep your mind focused on where you're going and you got to associate with those type of people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A lot of people assume that you're going to be the same person when you start and you're just not, you know, like, the things you deal with when you're starting out by yourself day one to who you're going to become at 20 employees, 70 employees, 100 employees, you know, to 5 million a year in sales, to 50 million, to 100 million, to 300 million a year in sales.
Dang, that sounds great.
It's going to change who you are as a person, right? Yeah, some ways good, some ways bad too. You know what I mean? And one of the biggest things I struggled with was you're going to lose friends, which a lot of people have a hard time with. I could tell you out of everybody I knew from day one, and it's not like I left them intentionally where I was like, hey, I don't want to be your friend anymore. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
Commonalities begin to change, right? So what I mean by that is, and I struggled with this, like my wife had a really hard time with this. Like a great example of it would be we would go hang out with friends, like some of her friends from like wherever, right? And I'm very like business minded, focused, business growth. Like we're year two, three into the business. And I would just get bored. And it's not anything of their fault, right? It's just my mind is only on this. So if anything, I'll just take accountability as my fault. But we would go sit and I would just be bored out of my mind. They're just talking about like, oh, I'll just do the football game and da 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 da. And I'm like, I don't give two shits about any of this, right? Go put me at the table with the dude that's, you know, can help me get to that next level because I feel more in depth and inspired by those conversations.
Yep. Yeah.
So by default, and then, you know, it's a hard conversation because you're hanging out with certain people. And I remember I went through this like my first 2 or 3 years in business where I started doing okay. I went from, you know, making whatever 50 grand a year to hitting 250, 300 grand a year. and you're just sitting there having a conversation with people that have a, not that there's anything wrong with this, but just that job making 30, 40, 50K a year, right? Right, been in my company for 10 years, just got my, you know, $2 an hour raise. And you're over here like, yeah, I just bought my $100,000 truck and my business just hit this much. And they're looking at you like, holy shit, you know, and you're like, and there was a point in my time where I thought that was cool. Like there was a very small window, like 6 months to like 1 year where I was like, oh, this is cool. I got the nicest car out of my friends. I got the baddest house out of my friends. You know, it was very ego driven. After a while, it got to be almost like a little embarrassing. Like I bought my first Lambo and nobody knew I owned that thing for 2 months.
Yeah.
Wouldn't show a picture of it. Sat in my freaking garage. I take it out on a Sunday to make sure nobody saw me in the damn thing. It
flipped. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I don't want anybody knowing I have, I don't want to piss anybody off. I don't want my friends to think I'm like this arrogant dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It just felt weird, dude. You're driving like a $200,000 car and you know, they're over there driving a 30K at the moment. And again, it's not that there's anything wrong with this. This is just what I'm talking about where the, it's just these small degrees of differentiation starts freaking happening. And over time that just starts to break away, you know? And you're just like, yeah, I'm not really getting much from this anymore. Like the conversations that we have are just not in alignment. You know, they're talking about the game on a Sunday and I'm talking about this is where we're going in year, month, two or three, or, oh shit, I just lost these employees. Like, how do I got to figure this out? You know? So like the conversations are different. The commonalities are different. You just really start. And then that just gets bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes on. The degree starts, the longer you try to fight that, like a magnet, like you're trying to hold that together, the less you're going to grow.
Yeah.
Where I really broke free was I was like, okay, I had this conversation, I think it was like 2019, that I made it a goal and said I have to be the brokest dude in the table when I go hang out with my friends. And I still,
that's a great goal.
Still to this day, I want to be the brokest guy at the friggin' table. How many people, 80% of the place, you know, of society today, when you talk to them, say, I need to be the brokest guy here. It's always the other way around. They always got to be the biggest dick swinger in the conversation, you know. But me being the brokest dude in the conversation, like, dude, I got nowhere to, the amount of, when you're the little guy on the totem pole sitting at a table, you're like, holy crap. Like they solve, like, I made a post about it the other day of, you know, some of the people that you're around, you know, you sit around and cry about stuff that takes you 3 months to figure out. Cause you're just thinking and wishy-washy. And some of these guys solve these problems in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Like, dang, shit, it's nothing.
Dude. You're stuck on this 20K problem, so bro. Like really? Like yeah. Go do this and move dude, on. You're like, crazy. Okay. You like,
said that. Yeah.
And so that's where my biggest growth has been is just being, because your mind expands so much, right? You go from thinking, man, $500,000 a year would be so life-changing to me. And some of these guys are like, I make this in like a month, dude. Yeah, like, bro, you're thinking way too small. And then you hang around these guys and you're like, damn, they make it look so friggin' easy. And then it just expands, even without them even saying a word, dude. Yeah. You just hang around them. You see the way they operate. You see the way they decision make. You see what they say no to. Like no, the answer is no, I'm over here. And you're like, okay. And you study, right? You're just a student being around these people. You will by default elevate. And that's the biggest hack that people miss out on in life. And they do it to themselves. They look at everybody's competition. Oh, I don't want to be around that guy. He makes way more than me. Yeah. That's the dude you need to be around. You think about that. How is that going to hinder you? Are you going to be more poor hanging around the dude that's making absolutely 10 times not more?
No way.
You're going to tell me hanging out with him for, let's just say, a week, you wouldn't learn one thing in your life to just think a little progress, differently.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me being around that guy, it wouldn't turn your temperature up 5 more degrees. To go a little harder, like,
yeah,
to make a little more, to aspire a little bit more. Like, and dude, this is where, like I said, 80-90% of the society, they don't think that way.
Yeah.
Everybody's a competition. No, they're not, dude. Go hang around a dude that's making 10 times. You're not even on his radar.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Well, you know, what's interesting is like talking about this, you know, I'm just sitting here. I'm like, you know, I think about a month and a half ago, we ended up letting go of this project, but I had a goal to sign $1 million+ contract in construction, and I had signed a $2 million construction contract. And I know you know this because I told you, but a week before I told you, our team knew and stuff, my wife knew, but like I just wanted to share this goal with people, and I couldn't. I'm not gonna go post it on social media because, like, you know, of that kind of embarrassment that you're talking about. And so I call a friend who's in business and doing some of what we're doing, and I tell him, and he was like, "Oh, dude, that's great." And I was just like, "Ooh, I probably shouldn't have told you." And then I call you, and you're like, "Dude, that's awesome." And it's like you also get, like, when you're around those people that are doing more, like the difference in them celebrating your wins is so huge. The difference is so huge versus even people at your level, you just feel that jealousy almost. It's so interesting. And so anyways, I just brought that up, how crazy true that really is.
Yeah. We get a real estate. My space is really weird about that. You get people that are agents and they all think they're competing with each other. And then you get an agent who has like 2 or 3 sales a month and they're like, they like get really weird about trying to compete with me. I'm like, you're not even on my level, dude. No offense, but like, dude, we're not even in the same arena right now. I've got, you know, so many other things going on behind the scenes and businesses I run that just my traditional sales are very front end of it. You know, trust me, you're not competition. And I share it. I mean, everybody sees on social media. I don't have some secret playbook. Every day, this is how I do it. This is what I do. I get up every day at this time. I do this. This is what my daily routine is.
Yeah. Like 2 a.m.
Literally people can follow me around. I'm in my office. I'm working, you know, taking like there's no secret. I don't disappear for 3 hours a day and do my magic stuff every day and pull these deals out. Like I put it out there wide in the open. You see a lot of these people that are afraid to share. I'll share it all 100% because the only thing the only opportunity you're going to have to match me is to just have my work ethic.
Yeah.
Like show up, put in the work the same way I do. And most people can't do that. You know, see some people like get up at 3:30 in the morning. Yeah. Oh, absolutely not. Okay, cool. I got 3 hours a day on you. I beat you every day by 2 hours. And while you're sleeping in bed, I'm up and they're like, yeah, but I could just sleep for an extra 2 hours. 2 hours a day times 12 months out of the year. That gives me 30 more days. If you do the math, just 2 hours a day, extra month. So imagine how much more I get done a month than you do at the end of the year, just by every day chipping away 2 hours more than you. But you're telling me you don't want to do that. That's why I'm not like, there is no competition. Most people won't friggin' outwork, you know? And so, but I enjoy it. I like doing it. And I think that's the secret with a lot of people is people that they think are competition. Nobody's competition. There's no secret.
We know it's interesting. Like in the business space, there's a lot, like I just went to a conference up in Minnesota with some really high end builders and I'm looking and I'm not trying to judge or anything, but you got the people who are fit and then you got the people who aren't.
Yep.
And it's really interesting to see the difference in how these people are, how they act, how their lives are. And just thinking about it, like when I started working out, finally like taking care of myself, the amount of relationships I built, I met Brad with AFT. Yep. Jason, like all these things came to fruition. I'm like, holy crap, that led me to you. Like all because I decided to do what all the other people weren't doing. And it was that simple thing.
People love to deny it. But the fact is that habits run across the board. Mm. So you can't find somebody whose car looks like absolute shit, bird shit all over it, full of friggin' McDonald's empty wrappers and cups on the floor, and their house is spotless.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, you're that person I see driving on the road and your car looks like trash, and I followed you home and you opened your front door, the inside of your house would look that way. Which your mind probably looks that way, which your clothing probably looks that way,
it's right?
It's all connected. Like whether you want to admit it or not, it's all connected. You know what I mean? So there's something to be said about that because you can't hide working out and being fitness, right? You can't hide putting in the work. You can't hide getting up 2 hours early and just putting in the friggin' work, building the friggin' muscle. You know, you can't buy that. You can't wake up one day and say, all right, I'm gonna go buy me some muscles today. I'm gonna go, like, you can't buy those things. And so I think that that's the thing that people don't realize. A lot of people look at it as, oh, it's hard work. Getting up early is easy. It doesn't matter, dude. It's an investment into everything you do across the board. If you can hold yourself accountable to getting up, if you can hold yourself accountable to what you put in your friggin' mouth every day, if you can hold yourself accountable in all things personal, if you can hold yourself accountable to reading 10, 15, 20 pages a day, listening to a podcast, right? All the personal development things, by default, that's going to pour into your work now. But you can't say I'm the most undisciplined, unstructured, unwhatever person over here, and my business is 100% dialed in. It's impossible. Like, you are your business. And so a lot of people will challenge you on that. And I'm not saying there is successful people. There's always going to be the exception to the rule, that dude that's like a slob and fat out of shape or whatever. He founded this great IT company that is proprietary that nobody can copy. Yes. Okay, great. But overall, you're right. If you were to look at the numbers and you were to look at the masses and you were to look at most of the people that are successful, they all at some way, shape or form take care of themselves. They all have some kind of consistent routine. They all at some way care about the way they look and their appearance and things like that. It's the little details that add up to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, you want to change yourself. That's the number one thing. There. You can't change your finances. You can't wake up tomorrow and make $100,000. But what you can do is wake up tomorrow and go do a workout. So you can start within yourself, start there, and then everything out of that's going to ripple, and you'll find your life as a whole, your business, your finances, your thought process. You know, you can't tell me you're up on stage walking and talking to people, jiggling all over the friggin' place, that you have a massive amount of confidence.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. Not you know, but when you feel confident, guess what? More business comes. You feel more sure in yourself. And so that's, you know, it's just, I wish more people really did understand that, because I was the same way. I was like way out of shape in my early 20s and stuff, and just taking care of myself and creating that consistency. I started working out and doing all that well before I got into real estate. Keeps me consistent today to do my thing. You know, you start wavering on, well, I'm just not going to get up today. What else are you going to give up? And you're, well, I just won't make that call today. I just don't feel like sticking to my diet today and doing this. Well, over here, I guess I'll get to that on Monday. It translates.
Well, and it's all the little things that we don't deem that important. Like, oh, like a little bit of a diet or working out or this, that. Those things end up adding up and they make the world of a difference. Absolutely. It's like, you know, for us, you know, change orders were never a huge thing in construction. Like, I didn't really care for them.
Yep.
Honestly, I wanted to eliminate them. I was like, let's just try to get everything in the front. And then I realized at the end of the year, holy crap, this is $500,000 worth of money.
1 degree difference every day.
No, we're focusing on change orders now.
Yep.
By the way, I'm just kidding. So no, that's so true. That's so freaking awesome. Do you require your team to work out at all? Like stay mentally or physically fit?
No. I mean, I talk about it a lot. I mean, I can. I've got 1099 employees and stuff like that. But, you know, we push it. I tell people they need to. You know, one of the first things, here's the thing. If people come to me, especially one of my agents, and they're like, I want to optimize myself and stuff, we'll always focus on the fitness side of stuff too. I'll have that conversation. Go work out. Go do, you know, go do these things. And they'll say, no, I don't want to. Okay, what's up to you? You know, you can't I think you just can't really nor would I want to. I don't know if I would necessarily want to make that a requirement. I would want them to do it for themselves.
Yeah, you don't want it to be forced. You
know? But I try to lead by example with that. You know, I'm up every day. I go to the gym till now. I'm out for freaking 4 weeks because of my back surgery. But, you know, I genuinely do lead by example. I show up and I put in, I try to be the top producer every month in my own company. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you're competing with no, I'm not competing with anybody. All my contacts are people I built relationships with. I want them to beat me. I want them to set the, I want to set the example. I set the bar every month. You know, I hope somebody comes in and knocks me off at the freaking top. You know what I mean? But I keep that thermostat high every day. That's the point is me every day showing up, me getting up at 3:30 in the morning, that way, if anybody ever comes to me and they complain, I don't have the results I have. Well, you see what I'm doing every day. Are you doing what I'm doing? No, start there. Come do all the things I do. Come be as consistent. Come work out. Come get up at the time I get up. Come take care of yourself. Do this. And then come talk to me and tell me if you're not getting results. But if you're unwilling to try these things first, don't talk to me about not getting results.
How involved are you with your employees personally? Like, because obviously there's the business relationship, right? And the everyday business. And then there's the personal lives of the people you work with and the people you lead. It obviously there's a line there. Where does that line kind of balance for you?
I've had to really establish boundaries, especially as we've grown, that number's had to get, because again, I look at everything like weight on your back. That's what I look at it. Right. And so what I mean by that is we care about our people. I care about my employees when they're going through hard times or they're going through personal matters. I wear that like my own. Right. And so what happens is the more that you have, the more weight you start stacking on your friggin' shoulders, which at the end of the day, you come home and all that baggage, you're taking it off in your own home, you know? And so what I've had to really do is as we've grown, as time's gone on and with me, one thing I start to do is really there's layers of like access to it, right? So what I mean by that is that I've got certain people that are close to me, like my personal staff that have been around me, have earned that time with me, right? They've stuck through things with me through thick and thin. They've put in the work and they'll have direct access to me. And I take a little bit more, it's not to say I take vested interest in all my agents, but if you're asking like from a very personal, like to the extent of like, I personally care deeply about what's going on in their life, probably a very small handful of them that are around me every day, you know, that, but we care about all of our people. I mean, as much as I can be in, but at the same time, you can't carry everybody. I could tell you that if there's one thing I've learned is it's very different when you got like 3 people to 10 to 20 to 30 to 50 to 80. Because, man, front desk doors open, everybody's coming in with their problems and problems. At the end of the day, you feel like you just got done with friggin' 20 rounds of Mike Tyson getting punched in the friggin' face with everybody's fucking problems. And it wasn't even your fight to fight, right? You're like sitting there, you're like, shit, this day went, I had a great day and I feel like absolute shit because everybody came and dumped their problems on you, you know? And so you have to just be very aware of that and who you allow to have that kind of access to you. And that's been a really big thing for me to learn I've learned that the hard way a few times. So
I think I'm just learning that right now as you're literally saying it. Cause I'm like, you know, as we grow, I'm like, when we started so small and we've been a family, you know, friend company, like that relationship is just so different. And so as we've been bringing in outside people, I'm still like having that same type of relationship policy, the same joking around, and not so much that I can't joke around, but I'm starting to realize, holy crap, dude, like that's not working anymore because I can't do that. It's just way too much.
They got to know you're still a person too. You know, like I still hang out. I still take a handful of them out on the boat with me. We go have a good time. We work hard. We play hard and stuff like that. But there has to be levels to that, I think, especially as you get bigger. And there has to, it has to be earned, in my opinion. You know,
yeah.
You got somebody that just randomly walks in the door and they got full on access to you over people that have been with you from day one or hung out from day one or been through it. You know, and I think it's a culture thing too, right? Creating that open collaboration of culture where you could take 50 people and have them help bury the load too. You know, if somebody's just having that bad day and you need other people to help out. So I think it's important to create that. That's one thing we've really tried to do is create a culture of like everybody helping each other. But as far as like direct access, that's one of the things my business coach was working on for me. He's like, dude, you're going to go in your office and you're going to shut your damn door for 2 days or 2 hours. And you're going to focus on yourself. Secondly, you're going to leave the office every day by 2 o'clock on these days. And you're going to go spend time with your family and stuff and stop giving so much of yourself to everybody and give it back to yourself. Give it to your family because you're basically just taking on the load of everybody. For every person you bring in that door, you just took on another 10 pounds on your shoulder, 10 pounds. He's like, and eventually your knees are going to friggin' buckle and you're going to suffocate. Yeah,
the pressure's insane.
Yeah, he's like, so you have to learn how to create these boundaries and these time frames. He goes, and you know, one thing you can do is weekly just have an open session for an hour. Say, hey, I'll tell you what, every Thursday we got open round table, whether that be Zoom or my door's open or we just have a, you know, we all get together in the, you know, conference room and just hang out for an hour and just round table. He goes, create delegated times where they can come talk to you about that. But you got to get rid of the just wide open access to you with that stuff and just make sure that only certain people have access.
And that right there is exactly what this podcast is about, because, you know, we talk about finding the balance between like home and work life, personal work life.
Yep.
A lot of people, I've met people that say, oh, there's a 50-50 balance. And I don't necessarily believe that at all. I think the balance changes as 100%. You grow. Like
changes
right
in
now,
seasons.
Like, hey, well now, like instead of your 13 hour days hustling, well, dude, now you need to take time for yourself because you got so much more on your back and it completely adjusts as you grow. So that's golden.
It's not linear. A lot of people like to assume it's linear, but it's extremely ignorant to think that your business growth and life growth is going to be linear. It's 100% seasons and what you're trying to accomplish, right? And there is times where I'll go through 3 or 4 months where we're pushing and I'm like, hey, we're heading into a hard season. I'll have to have that talk with my wife and say, hey, this is going to be 3 months of like grind, just so you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I care any less or anything. Just give you a heads up. But you also have to balance that on the other side and say, okay, I'm going to take 2-3 months and not let my foot off the gas, but stabilize a little bit, you know. But it's like any other road trip, right? You got your mountains where you're pedal to the metal, just trying to make it uphill in 70 mile an hour wind. And you got other times when you're going down a hill and you got your foot on the brake, trying to slow down because you're going too fast. No road trip comes without its highs and lows, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not a perfectly flat field where you're driving. So, you know, people just need to maybe keep that into perspective. That balance shit, because what's balance? It's very different. Balance to me, I guarantee you, somebody like me or a high level person, they can work 10 hours and not break a freaking sweat. It ain't nothing to me. Yeah. I can put 16 hours a day in and love every second of it. Mm-hmm. And other people, they're crumbling at 4 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so what one considers balance to another is very different, you know? So,
well, like the thing, I like what you just said. I never thought about it in that perspective. It's like, hey, you know, especially when like in a relationship, like, hey, babe, this 3 months I'm going to grind.
Yep.
Probably buy you a couple gifts. And then the next 3 months, we're going to have more time. We're going to go out more. We're going to go do this. That is such a good way to actually do that. Cause a lot of people, I feel like they're just trying to find that balance. And I've tried to do that. It definitely doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That is a great perspective to have. Yep. That's phenomenal.
Yep.
Well, sheesh, man. This has just been absolutely phenomenal. Thank you for coming back. I mean,
absolutely.
Let's see, from the first time to this time, the amount of how much better this was as far as, I mean, just everything, man, we got to have him back in another 3 months. Like, just absolutely phenomenal. Guys, we are going to have all of Blake's links down below to his social media, to his website. I highly recommend following him. He also does for real estate coaching, don't you? Don't you have a coaching program? So any of you guys that are looking for advice, looking to grow, or if you're looking to join the best agency in the app, I mean, I don't know about the friggin', I mean, just the nation, the valley, just everywhere, everything they got going on. I can't even begin to talk about it. Like, you guys need to come join him. This is absolutely phenomenal what they're doing. Everything is completely A1 game changer. So click the links below, drop a follow. Again, drop comments, guys. We're always taking questions and trying to really tackle everything we're going through and what we're experiencing. And more than anything, thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Peace out.